And he thought about it all week.
Don't wait until it hits you. Get vaccinated. Beginning in September, you'll need a vaccination passport to enter certain public spaces. A message.
Honest, we probably never will. That's not really important. But there are probably people out there who are important to you, who are reluctant to get the COVID-19 vaccine for themselves and for their children. We all have our reasons. But if we take the time to listen to others, we can help reassure and support them. And that's really important.
The first step to understanding is listening. If you have questions about the vaccine talk, a message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Live radio with Widget and my man Pro V.
All the way live from University.
Tim, Montreal. On CKUT. Nobody do it better, dog.
90.3 FM.
CKUT and the place to be from the bottom to the TOP.
This program is uncut. It contains strong language and some adult situations. Discretion is advised.
All the way live radio, CKUT 90.3 FM, every single Wednesday from 3 to 5. This is Pro V. Big shout out to Widget. Big shout out to CKUT, keeping the programming going once again. Been looking forward to sharing this week's show with everybody. It's an interview with DJ Chemo of The Rascals. So The Rascals is Red One and Misfit on the lyrics, and DJ Chemo on the beats. Of course, Rascals out of Vancouver, a classic Canadian group that paved the way for a lot of Canadian artists. But yeah, the first album was Really Living back in 1993, and the second album was Cash Crop in 1997. So we talked about the early work and what it was like in Vancouver in the early times and in Canada in general in terms of hip-hop and the whole environment that went along with that. We're going to be giving away 2 copies of Cash Crop on vinyl tomorrow night on my Instagram live. So that's pro_v_mtl tomorrow night, 8 p.m. courtesy of Return to Analog Records here in Montreal and Au 33 Tours up on Mount Royal. The questions will be directly related to this interview that you're about to hear. After the interview, it's just going to be a whole bunch of Rascals music. So enjoy the interview, enjoy the music. All the way live radio, CKUT 90.3 FM. Peace.
Hello, hello.
Yeah, man. You hear me?
Yeah, man.
Nice. All right, man. Well, yo, I just want to thank you in advance, man, for like taking the time to talk to me about, you know, the music that you made and that was created, man, with The Rascals and everything. So, been a fan for years.
My pleasure, man. My pleasure. It's good to still have people, you know, kind of appreciate the shit, so.
Yeah, man, and I'd been meaning to hit you up to do an interview, just, you know, on the strength. And then when I got the message from Return to Analog, how they were putting out your, you know, the Cash Crop again and everything, it was like, oh, this is a perfect opportunity to do this, you know?
Yeah, it's awesome. It's good.
So I guess I want to start back in, like, Really Living time. What was the environment in, and like, I guess you were coming up in Vancouver? You grew up in Vancouver?
Red didn't come till late, I think he was like 9 or 10 years old. He finally got to Vancouver, but yeah, because he's originally from, born in Jersey, I think.
Okay. That's dope. And what was the environment like in the city when you guys were putting Really Living together? How old were you guys about?
I think I linked up with Red when I was like 19.
you would have been like a year younger. No, maybe the same year, actually. He's in a grade younger, though, that's for sure. Vancouver was dope, man. It was a really, really cool vibe. Like, it was small, it was tight-knit, but it was cool, you know? Like, everybody who was into it was really into it. You know what I mean? Like, underground was the shit. It wasn't, you know, there was some commercial success, obviously, in the early 90s with some hip-hop records, but in Vancouver, it wasn't like everybody was listening to hip-hop yet, you know?
Yes, it was so, still...
those that knew, you know what I mean? And those in the scene were into... They were into, like, you know, the underground shit, right? Like, whether it was West Coast underground or East Coast underground. It was like that, like...
Okay, and what was the... Do you remember the first hip-hop show you went to in Vancouver?
One of the first would have been, like, Ice-T. He was doing his, it was the Lethal Weapon tour.
Okay.
Before that, I got it. Bad thing about me, bro, is my memory's so bad. So it's going to be some hazy, non-definitive answers for you.
That's all good, man. Remember whatever you can. do you remember how you got into producing?
I mean, it started with, like, DJing, right? Like, I was really into DJing. I started buying vinyl. I had, like, one turntable, so I was learning how to scratch off one. I might be playing, like, a cassette on one side and then just scratching with the other side.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, so from there, I was always like, oh, man, how did this... Like, I was... All the stuff I was listening to, like, a huge inspiration and, like, someone I looked up to was Marley Marl, right? So the records he was making were, like, they were all loops. So I was, like, really into, like, oh, man, I want to loop some shit up. And that's kind of how I got into it from there.
Okay. So a lot of that Juice Crew stuff.
Hell yeah.
How did you start producing? Were you doing pause tapes, or did you get a piece of gear and start doing it like that, or did you hit a studio?
I guess the first little piece of gear I had was like a 4-track cassette recorder with a Casio sampler.
Okay.
I really had some garbage equipment to play with. Even when we did like Cash Crop and the early Rascal stuff, I had some real garbage, but I made it work. I wasn't even really aware of like the cool drum machines yet, like whether it was the SP-12, and if they were a little hard to get, especially out west. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
those things they weren't floating around everywhere. Like, I did go to a few studios that had one. You know, I might have seen one or two back in my day, but like they were like. They were like some serious treasures, whoever had one.
So what did you use to make Really Livin'?
So Really Livin', I was working, it all started with Rascals. There was this guy who was, doing like a audition for artists to be on this compilation. And me and Red, we were hooked up and we were fucking around with our equipment, but we didn't have anything serious, right? We didn't really even know what we were doing. And then this guy, who is this African guy, who eventually signed us to his label for the first album under Ragamuffin Rascals.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, so that was kind of our name. And then this guy had like this audition and he's like, yo, yeah, I'm going to put you guys on my compilation. And I'd like to do your guys' own album. Cause, you know, he kind of saw some potential in us. Right.
Yeah.
We were a big crew. We had like 3-4 rappers, like 3-4 dancers. Like, it was a bunch of us. So there was a lot of energy when we were like on stage and shit. But,
So, yeah, this guy plugged us in with Roger Swan, who, you know, is a well-known producer and engineer in Vancouver. So we started going to Roger's house, and then Roger had certain equipment. So I'm like, okay, I started learning off his stuff and learning off him showing me and watching. So I ended up getting the same thing he had, which was a Roland S550 sampler and sequencing off an old Atari notator program.
Okay.
Yeah. After that, I ended up getting like a Roland W30. So I was kind of playing with that along with the Atari program as well.
Crazy. Not your average piece of equipment.
No, I guess, I mean, honestly, it was kind of just random studio MIDI equipment that, you know, most studios might have, but it wasn't like your, you know, typical or you know, classic, you know, SP-12 or 1200 and or a Kai. Like, that wasn't even up on the shit. So I was like, I was kind of learning off what Roger had, and then I just kind of stuck with it. I later got an MPC. I later got an SP-12, but, yeah.
Yeah. And so you said that you were still working off the Casio for Cash Prof, right?
No. That was just when me and Red first met. I had a homeboy. He was a graffiti writer, and he was like, he would bust raps just for fun. So I had this little demo tape with me scratching and him rhyming over some drums that I looped with that Casio, and then Red heard that, and then Red's like, oh yeah, dope, we should hook it up, whatever.
Crazy. So what was the response from the city when you dropped the Really Living album and you guys had a video out?
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, we were one of very few artists that were actually releasing stuff, and with the help of this little independent label guy that was, you know, helping fund our project. Like, we were one of the few artists that were actually on a level, and then people were like, oh, cool, yeah, these guys are putting shit out. And we ended up, he later secured some kind of a licensing or a distro licensing deal with Sony. So Sony ended up putting up some money for that Really Living video.
Okay.
But yeah, the response was cool. You know, there was a little buzz. People were getting, you know, to know our name. And like I said, there wasn't too much competition in the sense of, like, you know, artists legitimately releasing material or, you know, putting out a CD or, you know. There was a bunch of rappers just rapping here and there, but none of them had their CDs popping or a video or nothing, right?
Mm-hmm. Who else was around at that time from Vancouver?
Definitely this group called EQ. There were these two homies that moved up to Vancouver from Seattle.
Okay.
And they had a video. They had like a CD, or actually I don't even think CDs were out yet. So they had like a cassette. They had a 12-inch vinyl out. So those guys were inspirational to us. You know what I mean, like, we're like, oh man, these guys are like doing it. Like, we could do it too. Another group that was inspirational was Organized Rhyme, Tom Green and his crew.
From Ottawa.
Yeah, and it was inspirational in the sense that we're like, what the fuck? These guys are trash. If they can fucking put shit out, we're going to put shit out.
Oh, man, that's funny. And it's funny because I was trying to find some old Rascals Rap City interviews, and I came across Organized Rhyme interview.
Right.
And that's funny. So what led from going to over to, like, for the Cash Crop, you guys signed with a different record label, right? It wasn't Sony anymore.
Yeah, so that I think the Sony was just a distro deal for that one album, and or it may have been more, but the African guy, we kind of parted ways. We were kind of like, this guy's kind of, we didn't like his whole feel, so we kind of ditched him. And then we went independent, and Saul was you know, he was part of our crew. He was actually rapped a bit on the first Ragamuffin Rascals album.
Okay. What's the difference between the first Ragamuffin Rascals Really Livin' and the Really Livin' that we know that got commercially released?
Okay, so that there was an actual Ragamuffin full-length release on cassette and CD. I think there was one 12-inch that got pressed up. So what happened was this guy secured us this release with Sony. And he's like, hey, they want to put out the album. We're like, yo, I think it was at least 6 months to a year later. And we're like, yo, that shit is trash. We're like, that shit is real trash. We weren't feeling it at all. So we're like, there's no way you're putting that shit out. They're like, okay, well, remake the album. We're like, cool. So we remade the album. We changed up every beat. We changed up every rhyme. We added one or two new songs. And that's basically, yeah, the Really Livin' album that Sony put out is a remix to the Ragamuffin version, basically.
Okay.
But yeah, I think half the songs and titles we kept, but we changed all the lyrics and all the beats, and then we added like four or five new tracks as well.
Okay. And do you remember why, because I know it came out on CD and tape, do you know why it didn't come out on vinyl at that time?
Like that album, the full length?
Really, yeah, the first one, yeah.
Why did we never press the album? That is a good question.
Because it just came out, it just got pressed up in the past year from the German record label, right? Smoke On Records.
Yeah, the German guy. I don't know. That was on Sony, I guess. Sony probably didn't see the money behind doing a vinyl press the full length. But we should have took it upon ourselves to do it, but, you know, we didn't know much of the game yet. And or where to get it done or distribution or any of that. So that was a Sony call.
Okay. And so I guess like the second album, did it start with Blind with the Science? Is that like the first track you got?
That was I think either that or Soul Obligation. They were around the same time.
And what was the process for putting that album together, and was it different from Really Livin' in terms of, you know, how you guys put it together?
Yeah, I mean, at that point, I was kind of had the beat making down a lot better. You know, the guys kind of now were kind of like well used to being in the studio, you know what I mean? Like, we had more time to do it. And we're just kind of making them as we went along. Saul was now managing along with his partner Duguay.
Okay.
And the two of them were kind of, we're in the middle of getting like money and investment, and then, you know what I mean, to fund that project, because it was all indie. Process was much of the same, you know what I mean? Me on the beats, guys coming up with their rhymes, but we're a little more comfortable in the studio now. I think we had a good idea of what direction we're kind of going.
Yeah, you wrote on, there was the inside, kind of the inside sleeve of the new Cash Crop. There was you were talking about the taking samples from cassette, taking samples from CD, like kind of anywhere you could find them, and putting all the ideas on the table. Can you talk a bit more about that?
Like the ideas and whatever.
Well, yeah, like there was one comment you wrote where you wrote that I think it was from your friend DJ Flipouts. Cassette tape he had recorded something from CBC, and that became a sample for Dreaded Fist.
Right.
You wrote on that album.
Sorry?
Go ahead, sorry.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, just like also how you, you know, you just wrote how you, you're taking samples from your mom's CDs and stuff. So I just found that interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Like you weren't just strictly on vinyl. It was just kind of like, I'm going to find anything I can. And yeah, I just wanted you to kind of just talk about that a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, I was taking stuff off VHS tapes and yeah, definitely my mom's CD collection or, but yeah, vinyl was always the main source. But it wasn't limited to just that.
And what about the in comparison with the first album? Was that the same thing too? Like you just, you took whatever from wherever?
Yeah, you know what? I think on this cash grab, I was trying to be a little more high fidelity. I was trying to get a little more clean sounds from stuff and, I think I was a little more concerned with the quality at that point.
You have the experience in the studio for the mixing and stuff.
Still, all the mixing and stuff, Roger still did. He pretty much did all our records. Like I think some of the stuff Gadget did later on.
Yeah.
Like on the Reloaded album.
Okay.
I think we had one guy in New York do some of the Global Warning album too.
Okay,
so but Roger still kind of handled a lot of the tracks.
And you guys really got. I found that you guys got really creative with your videos. You didn't always know what was kind of going on, but it was always an interesting sight or an interesting kind of concept. Where do those ideas come from? Like if you look at
From
to over to Dreaded Fist and you know even Really Living, like it's yeah. Just wanted to know a bit more background about that.
It was always a collaborative effort, like with the director and with Red, myself, and even our dancers. Our dancers and one of the guys who did one of our dancers also did like our like album covers.
Okay.
Did a lot of our art design and stuff and our logos and stuff. So he was involved, you know, in kind of inputting on that level as well. So
was it the same artist who did both album covers or Really Living and?
Yeah, Nelson, aka Dedos, him and he did the Really Living, and then him and his boys together did Cash Crop. So Cash Crop was actually a wall, like this big ass like 20 foot wall, and
crazy.
To be honest, I fucking wish that we ended up making it look like a wall, like it could have been us standing underneath it, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the end, they took the picture and then they touched it up and it just looked like a drawing. You know what I mean? But it was actually a wall.
Wow, that's nuts.
It's actually like a big ass 20-foot piece, and it should have just been us standing underneath it so everybody knew it was like a wall.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now as you're talking about it.
Yeah, so they took a picture of the wall, and then they kind of touched it up. It kind of filled in some of the colors a little stronger. So in the end, it just looks like a painting or like something they did on a canvas or something.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to ask you where that painting was, but yeah. So I guess they took that wall down at the point.
Oh, yeah, a long time ago it got covered up. I think soon after. It didn't even last a year.
Okay. Shame.
but actually in hindsight we should have like had a fucking like a little like timeline of, you know, inside the insert of the CD or something, like the guy's painting the wall, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that would have been crazy too. I'm sure a lot of people don't even know that that's an actual wall.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody recently sent me a good copy. A better copy of the one I had, where it actually you can tell it's a wall. So
yeah.
That's cool, man. That's cool.
So, after Cash, well, from Cash Crop, you guys won a Juno, right?
Yeah. I think the Cash
and,
Crop won.
But you, but like, you guys declined the award?
Yeah. Which one? I think we declined that one, I guess.
So what I heard was that you guys declined the award because there wasn't really any public presentation of the hip hop award and you know,
yeah,
in those
so the Junos,
in
the Junos really they kind of punked off the hip hop category like really good. Like they would give the award away like an untelevised portion of the Junos, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they were giving away awards.
They did that with the Grammys. The Grammys did that with hip hop in the late 80s, and they had kind of like a what do you call it? Boycott.
Right.
Yeah. So, but yeah, continue. Sorry.
Yeah. No, it was just that the way they treated that award, like they give it away before like a lot of other, you know, best art direction on an album, like shit that wasn't even music, you know what I mean? It was like the art designer for an album cover, like wasn't even a genre. So it's like they were giving away hip hop like at the top of the night, you know what I mean? Before they even at the very beginning. That so we had all the intention to decline the award, and by the time we got to our seats, which was like 7:05, right? We were like 5 minutes late. They're getting our seat. And most people weren't coming right at 7 because it was like they almost spent that first hour just filling the seats, right? Because it wasn't televised. It wasn't televised till 8 p.m. So then we show up at 7:05 and they're like, oh, we already gave you the award away. We're like, what? Only been 5 minutes. So like, that's literally, they start the night and they're like, okay, this hip hop award goes to these guys that aren't even here yet. And then they're like, okay, yeah, you can go to the press room. That's where we get the, you know. It would have been cooler if we actually got to go up on stage and say it, but we had to go to the press room.
Yeah.
But yeah, so after that, they're giving away the award for best children's album. Like, stuff that's like, you know what I mean? Like, the listenership is like, shit, I don't know. Maybe back then it was the same number. I don't know. But we felt different.
No, but you guys were right. You guys had it right.
No, it's like 96, 97. Fuck, bro. Like, yeah, hip-hop was huge. You know what I mean? Not to say in Canada or Canadian artists was huge, but the genre itself was huge. And it was pushing way more units than children's albums and classical albums. You know what I mean? But, like, all these other genres and all these other awards were getting given away after hip-hop. So we were like, bullshit.
Yeah, man, and I mean, it turned out for the better because basically, exactly a year after, you guys were performing Northern Touch, right, at the Juno.
Yeah.
So
I mean, that record did well. You know, the labels were behind it. Much Music got behind it. So finally, they're like, yeah, okay, we'll let you guys perform. It was a little shocking, I think. We're like, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's cool, though, man. It turned around. The whole thing turned around. Why don't you talk about the creation of that track a little bit? I heard it was supposed to be for a mixtape of some sort.
Yeah, so originally it was a mixtape that my boy Jay Swing used to put out mixtapes a couple times a year. And he always wanted, like, local guys or whoever he could get to kind of do like a little freestyle or just some original material at the beginning of the tape while they shout them out, right? So we had, I had this beat. He's like, cool, let's use it for my intro. They're red on it, and he's like, I'll get my boy on it, which was Checkmate. And so originally it was Checkmate and this other guy that used to rap with Checkmate along with Red and this fit. I think Fit's on it. Sure.
Pardon me?
Yeah, I was saying, I'm pretty sure Misfit was on that mixtape version as well. And then Jay gave Saul a copy of the mixtape. So I was like, yo, this shit is dope. He's like, let's make a song out of it. So then Saul was like, I guess Saul was working with Big C somehow on some level. He's like, yo, let's do a collaborative thing with Chalk Lair, right? And I didn't even know this until 2 years ago when each guy did an interview and then they wrote on it, BBC thing or whatever it was. But Chalk Lair was rolling with Cardinal that day. He was his ride. And they kind of just threw him on it. You know what I mean? That's why he doesn't actually do a verse. I guess they're like, hey, I think Chalk's asked Chalk Lair to just help him do the chorus.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then Thrust came about. I'm not sure. I think Big C was like, yeah, we're going to put Thrust on it too. So.
Mm-hmm. And talk about the video you guys shot together. That was pretty entertaining. That got a lot of spin on Much Music at the time, and even I know they were playing it down in the States.
Yeah, BET ran it for a little bit. It was dope, except for getting up at like 6 a.m. to be at the warehouse or the studio. And it was hilarious. They're like, yo, you guys are gonna be there like 7 a.m. Okay, we show up at 7. Nobody's fucking actually on camera until like 10, 11 a.m.
Yeah, man.
That part wasn't fun, but it was cool. Like, pretty much everyone in Toronto and in that circle and ended up coming through that day, you know?
So that was shot in Toronto?
Yeah. We flew out. The only thing we had, Rascals was in Toronto a lot during those times, so we only had to fly out Checkmate. The other guys came through. Jellystone came through, Judy Black, Socrates.
Yeah. And
it was shot by Lil X, which was amazing.
Yeah. Definitely. And how did you feel about that sample being used a couple times that year? I know DMX had a track and Mace had a track on his album.
It was cool. I think most people knew, especially in Canada, that we put it out first. So it wasn't like, oh, Rascals was copying DMX. It was like our record was out for like a month or two, and then DMX's record drops. So even some people are like, oh, DMX copied your shit. We're like, oh, I don't think so, but.
Yeah. And there was an old sample
originally. Yeah, exactly. Originally, it was the EPMD joint, so it's just anyone was bound to come across it, right?
Yeah.
And that shit back in the 90s used to happen a lot. It'd be two guys come out with the same sample.
Yeah.
At the same time.
And one thing I definitely did not want to forget to ask you about was I wanted to know more about how you guys linked up with Barrington Levy and how the Top of the World track came about.
That was pretty much Red's brainstorm. And I'm not even sure how he came across Barrington, but somehow he got connected with him, maybe through some other people. It might have been these promoters from Calgary that Red still works with, actually. They might have had a link, because they had a lot of links in Jamaica and in the Caribbean, so they might have connected that. But Red had this idea. He's like, yo, I want to use that hook from the old Barrington Cut Your Rings record. And he even had this beat in mind. So he gave me the sample and basically the rough demo to that beat. And then I just, like, iced it up, and then he ended up getting Barrington to come through. I might have been Caravan at the time in Toronto. And then we have Barrington come record at Cherry Beach Studios.
Which studio, sorry?
And then Cherry Beach.
Okay.
And then later, I guess it might have been 6 months or a year later, we had him come to Vancouver to film the video.
Okay, that was shot in Vancouver.
Yeah,
I know you guys put little shots in New York too, because he was singing about New York. And
yeah, that was all like stock footage from wherever the director guy.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So you were there in studio with Barrington.
Yes, sir.
I've seen the guy live, and he was exactly the same live as an older man that he sounded like all the records that I hear, you know. So
yeah,
how was that experience live with the legend like that?
Ah, it was cool. Yeah, he's chill. You know what I mean? Like, was no diva at least, but he was chill.
Nice.
Yeah, and then even we got to do another song with him. Red ended up getting him on another song, and we ended up shooting that in Jamaica. And yeah, he was cool.
What's the name of that joint again?
That was called No Fuss.
Okay.
It was just Red One featuring Barrington. So we took, I had another record that I sampled that I had like an old vinyl, and I was like, yo, this vibe is dope. And then I had him, I think I had his voice sampled, and Red's like, oh, we'll get him to re-sing it. I'm like, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice. And then I feel like that track that you guys put out really influenced that Bad Boy Shine track, you know?
Yeah, that's a funny story. So Saul was working at Arista in New York at the time, and he gave Puff Daddy a copy of the album. And then Saul would maybe, like, I don't know, he said a few days or a week later, he came by his office, and he was like, he saw him like bumping to the album, like, yo, I really dig that Barrington joint. Just like a few months later, bro, it comes out with the Shine joint.
So, yeah, man.
It's pretty safe to say that, you know, we put the bug in his head.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, he had his ear to it.
That's cool, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about who else did you collaborate with throughout the years? I mean, you work with Checkmate, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, you're talking like big names. We had KRS and Beat Nuts and, you know, a lot of Toronto guys, Chuck Laird, Socrates, Arnell. In hindsight, we didn't really have that many like collabs, but yeah. Well, we did something with Muse Ion in Montreal, because they were signed to BMG at the time too.
Yeah, you guys split a single. Yeah.
Yeah, so the label was like, yo, why don't you do this to Montreal? The guys were like, oh, then.
Yeah, so. And, I mean, you've done so much over the years. Why don't you let the people know what it is you're doing now? And, because, yeah, various projects I see you working on.
Yeah. I spent some years working with Trey Knights. I'm still kind of working with him and helping him out. He's just a kid from out here. Hip-hop kid. But right now, I'm kind of focusing on this reggaeton artist named Balam.
Mm-hmm.
He's a kid. He's from Mexico, but he's been living out here for like 5-6 years since he was a kid. And he's still young. He's only like 21. That's a different vibe, but.
And you're producing that as well?
Yeah. I'm doing most of the production on his stuff, but there's some stuff that you get beats from other places.
So hip hop, like reggaeton. What else do you dive into?
I work with some like dancehall artists. I worked with a few different ones. There's one guy out here.
You did reggae remixes on some of the Rascals records too. Like, those were not hip hop.
Yeah. Definitely dancehall stuff and.
Yeah. Yeah, I cut you off. Are you about to mention somebody?
No, I mentioned a guy named Tugstar.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a Jamaican guy living out here in Vancouver. He's dope. I've done a few records for him.
So you're still out in Vancouver?
Yeah, man.
Did you ever move out from there?
No, man. No, I never moved. I was thinking of going to L.A. for a while. I would be spending a couple months at a time out there. But, never moved.
Nice, nice. And, yeah, man, looking forward to having you provide the record for the Create a Loop sessions coming up.
Oh, yeah. I got to find that shit.
And then...
And so you're saying find one album, right?
Yeah, one album, and just something that's really sampleable, where there's a lot of good sample moments, and then producers can just go through it and sample whatever they can, and then everybody kind of plays beats for each other at the end of the night. And obviously during COVID, it's been online doing Instagram Live type of things during COVID. It used to be, for a couple of years, it was always, you know, the last Wednesday of the month, people would show up at a location and everybody's there, you know, in-house.
Right.
It's been a good producer event, bringing a lot of the producers together in the city here. And it's been spreading around the world, across Canada. And it's just good for hip-hop, you know, good to get that sampling thing back in there, because for a while people weren't really messing with samples.
You like it better?
And
yeah, no doubt. Yeah, I've been getting back into it a lot myself. Just some straight pirate shit.
you had a cool ability to put like samples from 3-4 records together. You know, like not a lot of. A lot of producers, it's like one or two, you know?
Yeah.
But I feel like you would be
I came from that era where dudes were fucking using like 6, 7, 8 samples. You know what I mean? Like, so...
Yeah.
It was just kind of what I knew. I don't think I was being super innovative or nothing. It was just like... You know, the early, late 80s, early 90s, like... Dudes would, yeah, literally, like a lot of the Public Enemy stuff, those guys would be using like 10 different samples on one record.
Yeah, you came up in that.
Even the Ice Cube's first album, same shit, just like a bunch of different like samples all flying in and out.
Yeah, it's Bomb Squad, man. They were a good team, you know?
They're a good team.
Hell yeah. Hank Shockley has the head of that, so. But yeah, man. Anything that you want, other than your artist that you're producing for and pushing, is there anything else that you want to mention to the people? Like,
think of right now, I'm drawing a blank, but. I got a Spotify account or Apple, all the stuff, all the Apple, all the you know, the regular main streaming sites. I got a new artist page under DJ KEMO, no spaces, because there's some guy in Atlanta that pretty much stole my name.
Okay.
So I had to do a DJ Kemo with no spaces, because his is DJ space Kemo. But, yeah, so I got, and I'm kind of focusing on putting out mainly just hip hop shit, like grimy, you know what I mean? Like more, you know, not so much of the dance hall or any of the reggaeton stuff, just hip hop stuff under the DJ Kemo artist name.
Yeah, man. Definitely, definitely. Kind of zoned out there. You still there?
Yeah, man.
Okay, cool, cool. Yeah, man. I feel like I had a couple more questions, but I'm drawing a blank as well. I had a bunch of stuff written down, but I feel like I went through it.
Yeah, hit me back. If you think of them again, I could hear you back on my next drive out.
Yeah, man, respect, man. I really appreciate you, once again, taking the time, man, and talking with me. And I'm sure the people who are listening to this interview are going to enjoy it, too. We're going to give away a couple of Cash Crop Rascals reissue records,
nice.
All black versions of the original Cash Crop cover, black and gold, you know?
Yeah, man.
Did you see them yet?
Yeah. I got a few copies now. They're fucking just so sick.
Yeah, man. Sounds good, too. I don't know if you took a listen, but
yeah,
sounds good.
Yeah, man.
So, yeah. Thanks again, DJ Chemo.
No, my pleasure. Thank you, bro. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. We'll be in touch.
All right, bro.
Peace.
And morning, that the fraud guy think now the works blurred and dispersed. Red one giving warning to all the fraud MCs round the world. Come and say, one some boy couldn't touch red one, two some boys couldn't touch the veteran, send three some boy plus the crew champion. Watch me kill that noise and catch a charge of murder one. No phenomenon or comparison to the tongue and how it swung with the wrath of oblivion. When I grab the mic, showing up the shogun gets red with the blood of MCs. So I stage red one, then proceed with shock therapy for who needs. Provided by the bad, bad MC. Yes, bad to the bone, uncurable like HIV. Lyrically foaming at the mouth with rabies to detonate like Lebanese on Israelis. So evacuate while it's time to immigrate. I grab the mic and word straight, legislate in a diplomatic fashion. Call terminate, nigga, squash you like static. We bust the jab like a matic. You had it and fixed like an addict who OD'd on too much OE. Because I'm wine for test mine, who on the them sense with the raw mentality. Intoxicated on reality, survive and increase the salary and retaliate on who express hate because they hesitate while the red one elevates. First before my verse, made Buddha bless you, cause he blessed me. In form of smoke from a tree with abilities to summon powers of the dreaded fist. As a lyricist, to the world as a terrorist, so from a distance, you see shrapnel and debris, and in an instant, you got to recognize it's me. Black belt dapper dance to the 8th degree. The champion is me, red one. Cause I be the all veteran, me I the all veteran. I'm betting on with the knowledge to make moves strong and abolish. Terrorizing tracks like Genghis Khan, we be the rawest. Artists from Northwest Saigon, and that's word to the uplifted fist of the dread clear. Cutting MCs like McMillan Blodell. So go tell a friend and so on and so on. The movement of this dreaded fist no longer will be slept on. Dreaded fist of the Northwest, gotta be cautious how we exhibit our style to the people. Lethal doses leaves comatose kids. To match the fist, there is no equal to this.
A way with words is chosen right to explain. Poetry in my motion, coasting in and out of range. To maintain, I switch up the timing. Keep surprising line by line, a continuous jabbing at that syphilis. Or to your pressure spot, I pinpoint with the index finger. Inject and let the rhyme linger. Lyrically do a numb in the ring. Physically the champion of welterweights in my division. And still, inching to get better. Somehow, someway, maybe this dreaded fist will meet its match someday. So then I stay, and with my words I don't play. Though I faint and patiently wait for made mistakes.
Slip back to a fighting position.
Slip me in the chamber. Cock it back, toss me instrumentals and watch me bust on that. They must on crack, wanting their wigs split back. Cause I we run this and it's a well-known fact. Never miss, all veteran and specialist. Wrestle with the best, please, you can't handle this. It's too scandalous and dangerous for those trying to be.
and bust, but I don't think so. Who the fuck you think this is? It's the Rascal Red One, baddest in this rap biz. Rap with the misfit, I get the beats off of chemo. Stay frozen in a pose like B-Boys and Vendetto. Rock like metal, plus we heavy on the pedal. The chosen to rule over the bass and the treble. Bulldozing, blown blows at those who be posing. They scared cause they know we eat the mic like corrosion.
Dreaded fist of the Northwest, gotta be cautious how we exhibit our style to the people. Lethal doses, leaves, comatose kids. To match the fist, there is no equal to this.
We are the Dreaded Fist style lyricists. Once we start to kick the flows, continuous and dangerous. To be facing us, you see, easily pick apart your game plan. It seems to me you can't withstand this thing of the jab. I see the stagger in your step, you cannot fool. I'm master of deception, expect them to fall. I'm going for the sternum, flexing verbal skill. It's also an anatomical weapon. I hope I knock some sense into your common way. Pays attention to the rhymes that we say, representing from this day for the Dreaded Fist, fitting ready on the mission.
Shots.
is rising.
Take it straight to that faceplate, snatch and make detach. What now? Cause what I bring's the natural dispatch. Unmatchable. Word up, I got it like that. I'm just saying what's on my mind when I rhyme, and that's the bottom line. Heavy stress, got a nigga thinking that he must be tripping. I'll be running rings around the rhymes that they be ripping, and they know it. But still, they must be fronting, cause I'm saying something that they don't wanna hear, so now there's nothing but opposition to my every way of life. I'm saying I'ma bring it on, cause I must. Yo, I'm busting rhymes cause it's fresh when you deck with linguistic artistics. I mean, this rap thing is a shit, kid. Getting paid is a priority, no doubt. So run that rap, but quit the running at the fucking mouth. Yo, it'll never be the same like it used to be. Too many half-steppers and wannabes up in the industry. So yo, I drop some science every demo I make. It's like how you live in homes, kinda tripe, and it ain't that great. I want a mansion and a yacht and all that bullshit, but niggas compromise their own integrity to get it. Now maybe that's a price to be paid for the riches. Sell your fucking soul to the devil, now those sons of bitches are trying to tell me that my rhymes is too abrasive and aggressive. What? My street warrior attitude ain't impressive.
I move on to the scene like a graphic, I flow like traffic, I'm at my peak each and every hour. When I get a rush, I gotta bust with the Midas touch. Grab a hold of the steel and grip it with the camel's clutch. Let him feel, hear and bear witness as I reveal the sickness that's been quarantined and concealed, but not redeemed by Red, who's one with creation. In time and in space and rhyming and nation forever chasing. Hip hop until the final act of death takes my last breath. Four decibels of Seren Vega make me go deaf with nothing left but the force that creates life, which is the soul. Takes me to the next life where I will still rock and roll. The saga's told for non-believers to grasp and behold. The energy they envy manifested in me. From the dawning of time to the dust of eternity, death scripts there will only be.
We move like clockwork, individual gears moving in sync, conditioned and executed with precision. The regular recital of rhymes remains one of the many mechanisms used to exercise the brain. So stay wise to the hands of time because they don't stop. Hip hop, you don't stop. At the top of the hour, checkmate sets it. Red One Renegade revolves with the record clockwise. Retrograde rotation known to be not wise. Open your eyes before the alarm sounds. Countdown, the year 2000. The path is traumatic, time to drop mathematics. I figure four MCs in a circular configuration is an eventual progression. Time is of the essence, it's the essence of this profession to help make suggestions. Evolve from shadows, the day is now digital, whatever the means. Time is still critical, so don't clock this work, but take it for what's worth, it's clockwork. So synchronize your ink and rise, don't blink your eyes, cause we're on the brink of demise. So sit and rethink the lies. Flip out is what would describe me best, so let me flip out and take this mess from my chest. Clockwork, moving like the hands of times, four MCs combined together in rhyme.
It's like clockwork, clockwork. We stocking up the rhymes, but the clerk at the counter be the misfit, expelling out rhymes from the mind. So check it, if you wanna get jerked by the collar, you're getting pulled from behind the misfit. If you try to holler at the boys, checkmate, red, flip out. Yes, indeed, misfit. So instead, I think you should step to the side and just listen to the brothers that be on a ride, gliding back and forth like an up rock from a fresh foot. Indeed, I will come at your jaw and kick it down with the shit that is coming. Compound from the element, me in the track. You can't ever turn back. Whack. That's not the way, I never stand still. Yes, indeed, as I drill another rhyme, you play potential. Kinetic, the man be electric, electrifying suckers that think they can defy the man misfit. I reach down deep into the abyss and pull a rhyme to hit you stiff quick. And that's the way it go, the impact of a firm fist. I, like I said before, the dreaded brothers from the Northwest giving you the flow like clockwork. Every day it go spontaneous when we bust, and that's the shit.
I told you it's like clockwork, you know. Every day flow. That's how we go.
Emerge from the woodwork,
step in to the front, take control, it's like clockwork.
Well, I knock first to pre-warn of my presence. About to enter and overflow the drama center. So recommend you to think twice.
Fitting ready, dishing out rhymes
by the slice.
But of course, there's a price for everything now. Yeah.
And with the beats from Chemo, they made you entice the feeling of temptation.
And the thoughts of should I or shouldn't I got you complicated.
Yeah, the rhyme stated.
Opposition can't debate it.
The jealous hate it.
While the ignorant stays sedated.
Rated off a renegade, red one, rock steady. Connect with the fit, never miss, cause be ready. Can grab the mic and show you who got the clout. 12th round, last minute in this world title bout.
So sound the bell and let's do this. Taking whoever got bones to pick like an archaeologist. Speak now while we be on the topic. And if not,
shut your mouth while we drop.
When I plan my attack, I doubt that you're ready.
Red one and mystic, commit to this, we rock steady.
When I plan my attack, I doubt that you're ready.
So think it over before you make moves of a soldier.
When I plan my attack, I doubt that you're ready. When I plan my attack, I doubt that you're ready.
Snatch the mic with the blinding speed of the masses. Stop praying my sayings don't cross your path. For it gets more in my favor the closer we step. To inviting and rhyming is my specialty. So test me, showing flexibility. Rapidly kicking simple similes at all you lazy. And to the non-believer, yes, it's the one and only. None of the rest run parallel to me like an analogy. I got to be coming in first, it's my hobby. Though the last one off the block, simply cause I'm cocky. Floating a butterfly, stinging like my birth sign. I told you long time, you must resign. Before my science, believing you deaf, coming blind.
When I plan my attack,